Morning. Today's daf in Menachos Sadi Dalad. We are on Sadi Gimel Amud Beis. We're starting on the Mishnah on the very bottom of the Amud. We are finishing up the 10th paragraph this morning of the Masechta. Chomer b'smicha mibetunufa v'tunufa mibesmicha. So now the Mishnah is going to do its classic comparisons of these accessory activities that are done during a karban. So we talked about the mitzvah of smicha, we talked about the mitzvah of tenufa. We also talked about the mitzvah of nesachim in this parak as well, but right now we're going to be comparing smicha to that of tenufa. Smicha, of course, is the placing of your hands on the animal and leaning on the animal, and the mitzvah of tenufa is to wave the animal. So not all karbanos require smicha, not all karbanos require tenufa, but we've gone over this already. We are now just simply highlighting some of the comparisons and the contrast between them. So the Mishnah goes on to describe so as far as the chumrah that we have regarding the mitzvah of smicha, let's start off with tenufa. So when it comes to tenufa, so you can have, if let's say you have a group of people that are offering a karban, a partnership like we described last couple of days, so you have one of them doing the mitzvah of tenufa on behalf of everybody. And why not have everybody do tenufa? So we're going to see that in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to explain why not. But that's not, in other words, one person is going to do tenufa for everybody. Masha Enkin, when it comes to smicha, so we already saw this in yesterday's daf, the Mishnah now is telling us as well, and that is that every one of the partners has to do smicha. Nobody can get away with not doing smicha. Now, when it comes to tenufa, tenufa is done with the carbon yachid and with the carbon tzibur as well. Masha Enkin, however, b'chayim uvishchutim, and also it's done with the animal before the animal is slaughtered and after the animal is slaughtered. Now, the Mishnah is not describing every carbon. Meaning, what the Mishnah is just simply saying is that you have karbanos, both individual and communal, that require tenufa. You have karbanos where the waving is going to be done before and after. This is not a description of every karban. It just simply means that there exists an idea of tenufa as it relates to karbanos, both communal and individual, both alive and dead. Also, tenufa is going to be done for a karbanos that are alive and karbanos that are not alive. What we mean by this is inanimate, meaning lechem and the mincha. So you're going to have tenufa done by these items. The mashen came by smicha, but however, none of this is true by smicha. By smicha, smicha is only going to be done by an animal. Smicha is only going to be done when the animal's alive. You don't do smicha after the animal's dead. Smicha is only by individual karbanos, not by communal karbanos. Now, again, like we discussed yesterday, and on Shabbos, there are notable exceptions where smicha is going to be done on communal karban, but those are exceptions. But the rule is that smicha is only done on an individual karban, not on a communal karban. Good. Okay, so. It's a nice review. It's a nice summary of some of the more basic ideas that we have regarding smicha and regarding tenufa, and a comparison of these two ideas. Tana Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara. We're on Sadi Dalet Amud Aleph. Karbanos l'rabbos kol balei karban l'smicha. So we saw the structure already yesterday's daf. We're seeing it again. The idea of smicha is based on the pasuk of karbano, is that kol balei karban l'smicha, every member of the group has to do the mitzvah of smicha. If we're bringing the carbon as a partnership, every partner has to do smicha. So the Gemara says, look, if left to our own devices, and if we were to apply kal vachomer, here's what we all would have said. So tenufa, where nisrabta b'shchutin, there are more carbonos that are subject to tenufa. And meanwhile, nisrabta b'chovrin. But meanwhile, when it comes to tenufa, only one member of the group does the mitzvah of tenufa. We haven't explained why, but right now, but that's the fact. The fact is that only one member does so. Smicha shalonis rabda b'shkutin, einu din shenismai b'chovrin. So when it comes to the mitzvah of smicha, where we're not going to do smicha after shechita, so we already see that smicha is starting from a limited standpoint. So if it's already starting from a limited standpoint, so then we shouldn't have every member doing smicha. Okay, in other words, what we have over here is the classic kal vachomer. So that's what we would have said left to our own devices. Tamalamer karbanol, the rabbis call bale karban l'smicha, and therefore the drush is coming to counter the argument, and the drush is telling us, no, that when it comes to the mitzvah smicha, even though it is limited in scope, but still, in terms of who's going to be doing smicha, every member of the group. V'tesrabba tenufa b'chover me kal vachomer. So the Gemara says, okay, so now why don't we take the kal vachomer and move in the other direction? And this is a classic format of the Gemara, where once we've established a halacha in one area, so now let's just simply take what is the established halacha and move now in the other direction. And the Kal V'chomer now will sound like this. So now by smicha, where the starting point is that it's limited in scope. I don't do smicha on an animal after it's shechted. And meanwhile, we have every member of the group doing smicha, tenufah and nisrab b'shchutin. So when we're talking now about the idea of tenufah, where we know that tenufah is more expansive in nature, tenufah is going to apply to a carbon whether before or after shechita, so in addition, nisrab b'chovrim. So then it makes more sense to suggest that now we should have every member doing tenufah. So the Gemara says, good. So now the Kal V'chomer is bringing us to the conclusion that by tenufa, everybody should be doing tenufa. And now finally, the Gemara is going to show its hand, and the Gemara now is going to tell us why it is that tenufa is just simply not to be done by every member of the group, and that is Mishum Dalo Afshar. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why we're not going to have every member do tenufa, because of logistics. Logistically, it simply does not work. Hechi le aved. So the Gemara over here goes over the possibilities and is going to reject all the possibilities. Linfukulu bahadi hadade. Okay, so basically, sorry for the football reference, but everyone, you know, will huddle up and we'll all put our hands on it and we'll all do tenufa together. Good. So right, it'll look like a huddle. And everyone's hands are going to be in the middle. And now remember, we're not talking about smicha, we're talking about tenufa, which means that we're going to be lifting it up and waving in every direction. So the Gemara says, is that possible? It's not possible. Ki havi chatzitza. So the Gemara says, because what's going to happen is there's just simply not going to be room enough on the carbon itself where everyone's hand is going to make physical direct contact with the animal. And so therefore, my hand is basically going to be supported by underneath somebody else's hand. And the Gemara now is crying foul because this is now going to be a chatzitza. My hand will not be touching the animal, and this does not constitute a tenufa. A tenufa means I'm waving the animal where my hand is directly on the animal. So the Gemara says, Leinif alahad of Leinif. So the Gemara says, so why don't we do the following? So why don't we just simply have turns? In other words, so I'll do tenufa, I'll pass the carpet to you, you'll do tenufa, and we'll go around the room, and everyone will just simply have a turn doing tenufa. So the Gemara says, that's also not feasible. That is not a solution. Tenufa amarchman velo tenufos. Because the waving is a waving, not wavings. So in other words, tenufa is only a one-shot deal. Excuse me. It's only a one-shot deal. And so that means to say that we can only have one waving. So the only way to do it is everyone hands in. But if everyone's hands in, that means that some people are not going to be making contact with the animal. So, and if we do it one after another, so that's a failure of tenufa velo tenufos. So simply we have over here a logistic impossibility. Okay. Before we finish the perek, so let's just remind ourselves what we learned some time ago. And that is that how is tenufa done? So we learned this all the way back on Samach Aleph. So if you remember, going back now some time, so the Gemara back on Samach Aleph treated us to a description of exactly how tenufa is done. And that is that the owner and the Kohen would be doing tenufa with their hands on the animal. And so back then, we asked the question, but the, so Samach Aleph on the base. So back then, we asked the question, isn't this also going to be a chatzitza? Our Gemara has just rejected the idea that everybody's hands are going to be on the carbon when doing tenufa because it's going to be a chatzitza when my hand is not touching the animal. Take a look back at Samach Aleph. So I'll read the Gemara over there. So the Gemara says, "V'lakacha koin atanim yadecha v'ksiv ha'asam yadav tiviyenu." So ma kan koin af lahalan koin ma lahalan balan af kan balim ha ketzad. I'm going all the way back to the top of Samach Aleph and Beis. So how is this going to be done? Koin minich yado tachas yadei balim umeinif. So the Gemara there described that the koin is going to place his hand underneath the hand of the owner, and tenufa is going to be done. So after learning our Gemara over here, so now we have what is an exceptional question that we can ask on the Gemara back on Samach Aleph. Our Gemara over here rejects the idea of having a group of people doing tenufa because of the problem of chatzitza. Back then, the Gemara seemingly was not concerned about the idea of there being a chatzitza. Okay, so to this problem, so there are numerous answers that are given back on Samach Aleph. So we get to review. You take a look at Tosfos on Samach Aleph Amud Beis, so he is bothered exactly by this question. And I am reading now the Tosfos going back now just a short, just a short 30 blot ago. No big deal. So Tosus writes, Lav davka kamar tachas yad abalem mamish, dim kein havila yad abalem chatzitza ben akliu ben yad akohen. So what Tosus over here suggests as one answer is that even though the Gemara's language seems to be pretty clear, that it is yado tachas yidei baalim, so Tosus says don't read the Gemara so precisely. In other words, what we're going to do is we're going to say is that the hands of the owner are going to be under the animal and the hands of the Kohen are going to be next to the hands of the owner. So now we're talking about maximum four hands. There's room on the animal for four hands. And so therefore, that's one possibility of how to read the Gemara. And that's one suggestion Tosus makes, and that is to read the Gemara back then on Samech Aleph as Lav Davka. And the Gemara over there is not giving a precise description of how Tanufa is done with the owner and the Kohen. However, Tosus points out, Uvakunshus Perishal Kaman, Beperk Shte Midos. I'm skipping a little bit in the Tosfos. I'm in the middle of that Tosfos. Uvakunshus Perishal Kaman, Beperk Shte Midos. The Tanufas Akon Lo Ichbalan, Imieshba Chatzitza, the Iker Tanufa Babalamhi. So Rashi over there gives a more lumdish answer, and that is that when focusing on the mitzvah of Tanufa, whose mitzvah is it? So the way Rashi presents it, as quoted by Tosfos, is that fundamentally the mitzvah is the owner's mitzvah of Tanufa. The Kohen is going to put his hands there as support, but it's really fundamentally the owner's mitzvah, and so therefore the fact that the Kohen's hands are going to be resting below the hands of the owner, lo echpatlan, it doesn't bother us because it's not fundamentally his mitzvah; it is fundamentally the mitzvah of the owner. That is that's another suggestion. Tosus points out, and we did this Yerushalmi back on Samech Aleph, and I'm just reviewing it again. So Tosus quotes the Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi seems to indicate, like Rashi, that it was actually the owner's hand and the Kohen's hands directly underneath. Why? Because the Yerushalmi is bothered by a tznius issue, a negia issue. Over Yerushalmi mashmak sas to have a tachas yadav mamish. So the Yerushalmi sounds like it is literally hand under hand. De garcina gabi tenufos min chasot to bekoi min yechedo ve'ina hadaver ki or. The Yerushalmi says, you know, it's not inappropriate. Where the Kohen's hand is going to be going under the Sota's hand. Because, in other words, there's going to be a tenufa done by the Mincha Sota. And the Yerushalmi says it's not kior, it's not disgusting. Maybe Mapa Veinu Chotzeitz. Maybe Kohen Zaken Vafilu Tema Yelen. And Yetzer Amatzi Lo Sosha. And the Yerushalmi gives a number of suggestions why it's not kior, why it's not inappropriate. Either the Yerushalmi suggests maybe some sort of napkin, maybe an older Kohen, maybe contextually. In other words, the whole context of the scenario won't incite the Yetzer Hara. But anyway, a number of suggestions that are given. The premise of the Yerushalmi, obviously, is that it was hand directly underneath hand, and this supports Rashi's position, not Tosos, where Tosos describes it being Lav Davka. Anyway, with all that stated, now we go back to our Gemara. So our Gemara works out very good, because our Gemara is talking about a group. Now, I don't know how many people are included in the group, but in other words, we're talking about a group, and we're talking about Tanufa. Now, if it's a large animal, there may be room for all of us to fit. But if we're talking about Tanufa Chazav Ishok, right, just a piece of the animal, right, portions of the animal, or if we're talking about Tanufa of a lechem, which is just, you know, it's a small bread, so there's simply not enough room for everybody. And that brings us back to our Gemara, and that's why it will be a problem. And also consider, for Rashi, it works out really good. Because Rashi says that who's the Iker Mitzvah of Tanufa by the owners? In other words, the Kohen over there, Kohen is just it's supplemental. It's not his Iker Mitzvah. So his hand doesn't have to be resting on the carbon proper. But for the owners, however, it is their Mitzvah. And over here, we're talking about the ownership group. So for the ownership group to do Tanufa, every one of their hands has to be physically making contact with, physically contact with the carbon proper. Okay, so our Gemara and the Gemara in Samech Aleph, so especially with Rashi's Pshat, it works out very good. Okay, back to our Gemara. Now we're finishing up the Perek. Usmicha b'shchut and leisa v'atanan. Now the Gemara over here challenges one of the basic premises that we learned this morning, and that is smicha by shechted carbon. What do we say? No such thing. Meaning smicha is only when the animal's alive. That's what we learned in the Mishnah, and that's correct, meaning that's the accepted approach. The problem is a Mishnah and Tamid. And so now the Gemara quotes the Mishnah and Tamid, and basically, if I could just quickly preview the Mishnah before we see it inside, basically we're talking about the Kohen Gadol and his option to do the Avoda. right? It's good to be the king, and it's good to be the Kohen Gadol. In that, so as a Kohen Gadol, so any day you want that you're interested in doing the avoda, so basically you can introduce yourself into any avoda at any time. There is an entire system of Mishmaros, 24 families. Each one of them is going to be divided day of the week. And there's an entire system of who's doing the avoda. But if at any point in time the Kohen Gadol comes in and says, hey, I'd like to participate today in the avoda, so he's a Kohen Gadol and he's going to participate. And over here, the Mishnah and Talmud is just giving us a description of what happens when the Kohen Gadol introduces himself into the avoda of that day. And basically, what is the process in which we're going to be handing him the pieces of the Karban Olah, and he's going to be throwing the pieces up onto the Mizbeach. Good. That's the Mishnah over there. And with a description, the Mishnah goes and recounts, Bizman Shekohen Gadol rotzeh la'aktir. So when the Kohen Gadol is interested in burning the pieces of the Olah on the Mizbeach, Hay Olah b'keves, so the Olah was resting on the keves, we'll see the Mishnah in Tamid, where we're going to go through the entire mourning procedure. And there is going to be a point in time where the pieces are going to be stationed on the ramp, ready to be put onto the Mizbeach. They take a little bit of a break, if I remember correctly. If I remember correctly, they said Shema. Anyway, we'll see the Mishnah and Tamid together. But in the meantime, however, they go up on the ramp, Vaskan b'yamino, and now you had the deputy Kohen Gadol to the right of the Kohen Gadol, which, by the way, in general, that's not protocol. Protocol is that when you have the deputy flanking the Kohen Gadol, he should be flanking him on the left side, not on the right side. So over here, it's an interesting protocol over here, which is that the Skan Kohen Gadol is going to be on the right side. I saw a really interesting pshat. Forgive me, I forget who to credit this for. But over here, we break protocol and have the Skan walking to his right, because if you consider, we're walking up the ramp. Now, if you could picture now being in the Beis Hamikdash, walking up the ramp, so what is now to the left of the Kohen Gadol? So that's the Heichal. The actual edifice, the building itself, is to the left. So you don't want somebody separate in between him and the Heichal. So that's why over here we're going to have the Skan walking to his right. Okay, I saw that. I don't know who to give credit to, but I liked it. So v'asgan b'yamino. Higiel amachsis hakeves achasgan b'yamino. So v'alev v'oshilo arishon. Harosh v'aregel. And now basically as they're walking up the ramp, and now they got to the midpoint of the ramp. So now the deputy would start handing the Kohen Gadol the pieces, and now the Kohen Gadol would just simply throw them out onto the fire. So we start with the Rosh and the Regel. And when we see the Mishnah and Talmud, we'll go over exactly what the proper order is, the parade of pieces of the Karban that are going to be going up onto the Mizbeach. So Rosh v'Regel, Samech Aleihem. And here's the part that we want to hear right now. And what the Kohen Gadol would do is, first he would do smicha on the pieces, and that means to say that he's doing smicha on limbs of an animal, pieces of an animal that obviously have already been shechted. And Vizarkan, and we're throwing them onto the Mizbech, Oshir Hashem L'Rishon, Shtei Yadayim, Nosen L'Kohen Gadol, Somech Aleihem, and he would do smicha on the next pieces, Vizarkan, Nishmar Hasheni, and now the second Kohen would walk away. Here comes now the third group, and V'halach Lo V'kachayim, Oshitun Lo Shar Kol Ha'Evarim, and each group, one by one, would be handing the Kohen Gadol the pieces, and the Kohen Gadol would be throwing them onto the Mizbech. Somech Aleihem V'Zarkan, but he would do smicha, and then he would throw them on. Now, if the Kohen Gadol just wanted to do smicha, that's enough, and then the Kohanim would be the one throwing it on. In the meantime, in all this description that we just gave, what is clear in this Mishnah and Tamid is that smicha is being done by the Kohen Gadol on a carbon that was already shechted, and that goes against what was a premise of our Mishnah, which is smicha is only done when alive, not after you shech the carbon. Amar Abaye, the Gemara gives a quick and decisive answer to this problem. Hausam Mishum Kvoda de Kohen Gadol. You're misunderstanding. The smicha over there that's done is not smicha classic. We are not doing the mitzvah of smicha. What we're doing over there is we're showing cover to the Kohen Gadol. Part of the cover that we're extending to the Kohen Gadol is he's going to do like a mock smicha on the pieces of the carbon. And that's giving him kavod. Now, how is this understood as kavod? So I look at take a look at the Rashi on the top. Right, Rashi, the last Rashi that finishes off the perek. Mishum yikar de Kohen Gadol. Sheinir kamosh ikriv hu es kulan hayasomech aleihem velo shitei smicha sam noeges b'shkutim in haTorah. It gives more of the impression that he was involved in the hakrav, in the offering of the animal, because we know that the totality of the offering includes smicha. Now remember, this is a carbon tzibur, it's not a carbon yachid, so smicha would not have been done with this carbon to begin with. But just the idea that he's resting his hands on the carbon, it makes him look that he's more involved. The carbon is more connected to him. So it's just simply a function of extending more honor to the Kohen Gadol, but it's not because we are fulfilling the mitzvah of smicha. Hajalach Shnei Midos, that is the end of the 10th parak of the Masechet. We begin now the 11th parak and Lechem Aponim. We're going to be discussing extensively over the course of this parak details regarding the Lechem Aponim. Let's just go over a quick basic introduction. The Lechem Aponim is an interesting mincha in the Beis Hamikdash in that there's no kmitza by the Lechem Aponim. What happens is that on Friday, we're going to do all this we're going to discuss in detail. I'm just giving a basic overview. Friday, the Lechem Aponim are baked, kept over till Shabbos. On Shabbos, they're going to take the 12 loaves of the Lechem Aponim, bring them into the Heichal, and place them onto the table. What's sitting on the Shulchan up until that point in time is last week's Lechem Aponim. So what we're going to do is we're going to replace last week's Lechem Aponim with this week's Lechem Aponim. And what's going to happen then is that the 12 loaves that are taken off of the Shulchan are going to be eaten by the Kohanim. We know that we are changing guards from week to week on Shabbos. Last week's Mishmar ends on Shabbos. This week's Mishmar begins on Shabbos. And what the Lechem Aponim are going to be doing, being done, is going to be consumed by the Shtei HaMishmaros, the two Mishmaros, last week's and this week's. How are they going to be divided? So again, we're going to be seeing that also over in the course of this parak. It's actually going to be a machlokas in terms of how the loaves are going to be divided number-wise. Before the Kohanim eat the Lechem Aponim, so there are two spoonfuls of Lavona, frankincense, that are going to be resting. Again, another machlokas in terms of where exactly they're going to be resting. Some are of the opinion that they're resting on the top of the Lechem Aponim. Some are of the opinion that they're on the side of the Lechem Aponim. Some are situated on the table itself. And the bazichin are the matir for the Lechem Aponim. The bazichim are going to be burnt on the Mizbeach, and that serves as the matir for the Lechem Aponim, so that the Lechem Aponim can now be consumed. Okay? Many details that we're going to be covering over the course of this parak regarding the Lechem Aponim, and so let us begin. She'alechem niloshos achas achas, v'nefos achas achas. Now, when it comes to the She'alechem, not to be confused, the Mishnah over here opens up with the She'alechem that's offered on Shavuos. So those are two loaves, and niloshos achas achas are going to be kneaded individually. And venefos achas achas, and they're going to be baked individually. And the reason why the perek opens up with the she'alechem is serving as a contrast point for the lechem aponim. However, when it comes to the lechem aponim, continues the Mishnah, niloshos achas achas, so it's going to be kneaded one at a time, like the she'alechem. However, nefos shtayim shtayim, but they're going to be baked two at a time. So in other words, they're going to go into the oven two at a time. Now, you can ask me why. And all I know, because, you know, I saw the Gemara coming up, is that it's a drasha. So in other words, from a logistic standpoint, it's clearly not the case that you have to be baking them two at a time. In fact, by the she'alechem, they're only baked one at a time. So why is it the lechem aponim are going to be baked two at a time? So the best I can tell you right now is that it's a drasha. And we're going to see the drasha a little bit later on. Uvitfus haya osa osam. Now, they were made in a mold. In other words, the lechem aponim had a very specific shape. Now, what was the shape of the lechem aponim? This, too, is a machlokas. And we're going to see that machlokas later this morning, exactly what the shape of the lechem aponim were. So, but whatever the shape was, so how did they get the shape? There was a mold. So there was a mold in the Beis Hamikdash in which the lechem aponim were put into. Our Mishnah describes there were actually two molds. Uvitfus ayosa sankashu rodan, no san litfus. And then when they were taken off the oven, the word redia, right, we saw that back in the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, redia sapas. The removal of the bread from the oven. So when taken off of the oven, so it too was placed into another mold, kadesh lo yiskalkalu, so that the bread retained its shape by placing it into the mold after it was taken out of the oven. Okay. Minan imili, so we start off with a brisa, a couple of drashas. Tana Rabban, the Gemara quotes the brisa. Shnei esronim ye hachala ha'echas. Now, every one of the 12 loaves is made up of shtei esronim, two isamrons. We already made the comment earlier in the Masechta, but let's review. The Lechem Aponim had a lot of flour, a lot. A standard mincha was made up of one isaron. Each one of the loaves of the Lechem Aponim was made of two isaron, which means to say that the totality of the Lechem Aponim were made up of 24 esronim for the Shtei Alechem. Now that's fine, meaning okay, so in other words, there was a lot of flour, and consider also that the Lechem Aponim was divided amongst the Mishmaros. In fact, two Mishmaros reading from the Lechem Aponim. But in other words, just I'm contrasting it to a standard mincha. A standard mincha was made up of one isaron. The lechem upon him in totality was 24 isaronim. So, shnei isaronim yeachal ha'achas, each one of the lechem upon him was made up of two isaron. Now, in terms of how they're needed, they're going to be needed individually. Now, we have a drasha, the word yiyeh, which actually is in the parsha of the lechem upon him, but is an extraneous word. So that word is telling us that this is the way it's always going to be done. Meaning in terms of the kneading procedure, it's always going to be kneaded individually. That's true by the lechem upon him. It's also true by the shei lechem. Now, how do I know that when it comes to the lechem upon him, it's going to be baked in an oven two at a time? Tamalamar visamta osam. You're going to put them in the oven. Now, it's interesting. The word osam, them, could be referencing all 12 loaves. But the Gemara does not understand it that way. The Braisa does not understand it that way. We always take a conservative approach when it comes to numbers. Whenever the Torah says a plural, so we take the most conservative approach, which is two. In other words, once you go beyond two, so ain't ledavar sof, right? The Gemara's expression elsewhere is tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Tafasta muwa tafasta, right? When giving a definition, so take the most conservative approach. So therefore, the word osam over here is to be understood with the number two. So v'samta osam. Yachal shtei alechem kei. Now, I might have thought that the shtei alechem also should be like this, meaning baked in an oven two at a time. Tamalamar osam. The word osam now is going to be reused to teach us that this procedure of baking two at a time is only for the lechem upon him, not for the shtei alechem. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, the Braisa just came to an end. And the Gemara says, Hayosam ha'afikte. Now wait 1 second, you can't do that. You can't reuse a word to teach us two different drashas. Im kein lemakrav visamtem. No, if the Torah just wanted to say, to place them, the Torah could have used the words visamtem. My visamta osam shma minatarte. By electing to use a different phrase to describe putting them in the oven, so that means to say now that it generates not one but two separate drushas. And so v'samta osam now gets us to the point of one, that we're going to put them in two at a time, and two, this is a procedure exclusive to the lechem upon him, not to the shei lechem. Tana Rabban, the Gemara continues, v'samta osam b'tfus, shlosha d'fusim, heim. There is a total of three molds. Now, the Braisa seems to be running against the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes two molds. The Braisa over here describes three molds. Now, I'd like to create peace between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And the reason why I'm inclined to do that is because the Gemara is not bothered by this. So, in other words, the Gemara doesn't ask a question, hey, our Mishnah says two. So, it sounds like, again, the Gemara is silent on the issue, but it sounds like our Mishnah, even though describing two, may not just be giving us the total picture of what it looked like, and the Braisa could just simply be giving us a more comprehensive view of the entire procedure. Fine. So first of all, when we're kneading it, so you're going to knead the dough, and now we want the dough to take shape, so we're going to take the kneaded dough and put it in a mold. That's mold number one. In the oven itself, there was actually a mold in the oven, meaning built into the oven, you had mold, so now you would transfer it from the mold that you needed it in into the mold that's in the oven. Obviously, it would be the same shape, and that's how it would keep its shape while being baked. Uchshuhu roda no snow bitfus kedoshlo tiskalko. And now, when we take it out of the oven, so we're going to have now a third mold in which we're going to be able to put it into. But lajulot tiskalko common. The Gemara says, okay, but why do I need a third mold? Meaning, if it's retaining its original shape, so why not just simply bring it back, return it back to its original mold, meaning it's the same shape? Interesting answer of the Gemara. Really interesting answer of the Gemara. Kevin da'afile nafka. The Gemara says, yeah, but you know, in the oven, it's being baked. It's also expanding a little bit. And because of that expansion, it's not going to fit in the original mold. So therefore, that third mold in which it's going into is going to be slightly larger in order to factor in that little bit of expansion that it went through while in the oven. Okay. A logistic problem. A halachic problem, a logistic problem. I'll start off with, let me just present a little bit. So I'll start off with a logistic problem. Logistic problem, why is there an expansion in the oven? Meaning if it's being placed in a mold in the oven, so shouldn't that already constrict it so that it shouldn't expand? I mean, isn't that the whole point of putting in a mold in the oven? And yet over here, the Gemara says very, very, very candidly, like no fighting back, that there's going to be some sort of expansion. Okay, so that's a logistic issue, and it's not me raising the problem, already the Rishonim are bothered by that. Meaning, what expansion are we talking about if, in fact, it's a mold? Maybe, as one suggestion, maybe the expansion is going upward. Oh, maybe the mold itself already accounts for the expansion. Okay. Again, that's a logistic issue. A really interesting halachic issue is that the Gemara over here is acknowledging that it's expanding a little bit, it's rising a little bit. Why is that so interesting? Chometz. Because we know that the lechem upon him is matzah, it's not chametz. And so over here, what the Gemara is saying, very candidly, is that it's okay for it to expand a little bit, as long as it's expanding in the baking process, so that is not factor in, that does not result in chametz, meaning it still has the name of matzah. So it's interesting that the Gemara over here is describing how it expands a little bit, and clearly it's maintaining its matzah status, it doesn't become chametz status. And so this obviously now is a segue to a really interesting discussion in terms of exactly what the definition of matzah is, and when is it going to become chametz, meaning can dough become chametz in the oven itself? Okay, and again, I'm just telling you that our Gemara is a starting point for the discussion. Obviously, the discussion goes on much more than what we're doing right now. We're just scratching the surface.
Question is that another logistical question: if you're transferring from one mold to the next, don't you lose some and you drop below the minimum?
I'm gonna show off my culinary expertise right now, and you're gonna laugh. But you know, they sprayed the mold with a little.
the first
the first mold was
for the dough, right?
Yes.
So when you're transferring the dough, it's going to lose its shape.
Okay.
To the second mold. So what's the purpose of having a mold when you lose the shape anyway?
Okay, you're coming at it way too practically. The Gemara is assuming that all this can be done. I think if we were there and we saw it, so I think it would clarify. Meaning, we're trying to envision it based on the small amount of information that's given to us by the Gemara, and so I at this point I'd only be guessing. Itmar, and we're finishing off the daf today. I know we just started the Amud Beis, but you'll see it's a short Amud Beis, and a really interesting debate is what was the shape of the bread. Now I know this conjures up the traditional questions of, well, how could they be debating this issue? Meaning, this was done for centuries. In other words, we had a Beis HaMikdash, first Beis HaMikdash for 400 years, the second Beis HaMikdash for 420 years. And so these are things that were done for centuries, for generations. And so we're debating the shape of the bread. And so my answer is, yeah, we're debating the shape. That's what we're doing right now. We're going to be debating the shape of the bread. Now, the Amoraim are debating it, and they did not see the Beis HaMikdash. And we all know that. We all understand that. But still, it's always strange, it's always unusual when we have these types of machloksim about what actually happened in the Beis HaMikdash, when, you know, it clearly, this was the practice for a long time. Okay, but still now, there are going to be two opinions presented in the Gemara. Itmar lechem apanim keitzan osim oso. So what exactly is the shape of the bread? So Rabbi Chanina amar kimin teva prutza, Rabbi Yochanan amar kimin sfina roketas. So we have two shapes. Basically, it's going to be either a rectangular box shape. That is the first opinion. That's teva prutza. It's like an ark, and Noach's ark was a teva, meaning it was, you know, we generally have this idea of a speedboat, nothing doing. In other words, it was a box. It was a rectangular box. It was a teva prutza. It was an open teva. So that means to say that, and if you look at the very basic picture over here in the Gemara, but it does a wonderful job just giving us the construct, the configuration. It was a flat bottom, sides going up. That was the shape of the lechem upon him, according to Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yochanan amar kimin sfina rokadis, and Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it looked more like a speedboat. Okay, so in other words, you get a good picture in your mind, right? Not a pontoon, and it's funny because that's all I rent when I, you know, when we go on the lake. I just get the pontoon. I'm not interested in speed. So but in other words, but then passing me by all the time, you say you have these wonderfully, you know, powerful boats, and the shape of the boats is that it's a V shape. So in other words, so basically it's like the picture over here indicates, right below the rectangle. So you have the V. So it's a V shape. So in other words, it tapers down to basically a point. And so these are our two positions in the Gemara, and what the Gemara will now do for the rest of the daf today, for the rest of this Amud, is it's basically going to go over what we know regarding the Shulchan and the stacking of the bread one on top of another, and which position seems to be making more sense based on the other pieces of information that we know. Let's begin. So the Gemara says, so wait one second. So let's start off with the two spoonfuls. We are going to assume right now, in my intro to the parak, I pointed out that this is a subject to a debate, but right now we're staying on one side of this issue, and that is that where were the two spoons placed? On the top of the lechem aponim. The lechem aponim were stacked one on top of another. There were two columns on the shulchan, and they were stacked in one column, six on the other column. And where was the bezichin? So the bezichin were placed, right now we're assuming, on top of the bread. So if we're talking about rectangular in shape, so that means that it's rectangular in shape, and that means that it was flat, nice and flat. So where were the spoons placed? On top of the bread. And it sits there quite comfortably on the flat bottom of the bread. That's great. So Makas, but the Gemara says, but Elamon Damar Kimisvina Rokatis. But however, if we're talking about where it's a V shape, so that means that if it's a V shape, that means that there is no flat, meaning everything now is angular. It is slanted. And so where exactly are we going to be placing the spoons? On the top of the top bread. So the Gemara says, Hecha Aviyasa Bezichin, Makamavid Lehu. So the Gemara says, well, if they are slanted, if it's a V shape, so the Gemara says, fine. So what the Kohen would do, and presumably, I'm guessing only for the top bread, where the bezichin are sitting on, is that he would make a flat area surface somewhere on the top bread so that the spoons can sit comfortably on the very top bread.
Why not inside?
So
it can be inside the V-shape.
Okay. All right. The Gemara assumes that it needs a flat surface. Bishlam alaman damer kimenteva prutz ahinu davyasve kanim. Alaman damer kimen sfina rokadis kanim hecha avyasve. So the Gemara asks another question that we know, separating each one of the breads, one on top of the other. So there are three little poles. They're very narrow that are placed between each loaf of bread that's stacked one on top of the other, and basically it provides a little bit of air, a little circulation, so that the breads aren't literally sitting one on top of the other. And now, if they're rectangular in shape, so it's perfect. So I can easily envision how these three slats are going to be placed comfortably, trisected underneath each one of the breads. However, if the shape of the breads were angular, if they were slanted, so where exactly are these three slats going to be sitting? So Morsha Avid Lahu. So the Gemara says once again that even though it's a V shape, but basically what they're going to do is they're going to configure the breads. They're going to shape the bread so that part of the breads can easily cushion the three slats. Over here, okay. If you have an Art School Gemara, which I have one now to the side of me, so you could see a picture. He does a beautiful job giving a depiction of how the slats would look if in fact they are a V shape. Bishlam alaman da'amar kimin teva prutza hainu desam chalei snipim alechem. So the Gemara says now there are side supports for the bread. In other words, what we're trying to look at right now is basically running along each one of the vertical sides of the shulchan. So you had these side supports which were giving apparently support for the bread so that the bread would not fall over to the sides. So the Gemara says, look, if we subscribe to the idea teva prutza haisa, kimin teva prutza, that they were box shaped, they were rectangular shaped, hainu desam chalei snipim alechem. So these side supports, so it's very good. Meaning we're looking at a rectangle, we're looking at the lechem aponim in the shape of a box, and now these side supports, these side walls going up, the verticals, are going to be resting along the side of the lechem aponim, and the side of the lechem aponim is a simple 90-degree angle, and it works out very good. But the Gemara says, but if we're talking about where the lechem aponim are shaped like boats, and they are tapered to the bottom, so that means to say, what exactly is resting along these side walls, these support walls? So in other words, the only thing that's resting is the very top of the boat, and that's not much of a support. So the Gemara says, da'agaluhu me'agel. So the Gemara says, well, we're going to have to re-envision, we're going to have to have a new picture in our head of these side walls. These side walls are actually not just vertical walls going up, but they actually go in order to provide full support for the bread. In other words, basically these side walls are going to have actual material that's going to go underneath each one of the breads, so a protrusion going into the bread, so that's providing support for not only the side but even for the bottom as well. Now the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. Now the boat picture actually works out a lot better, because now imagine that these side supports are really functional. Because without these side supports, so what's going to happen is the boat's going to tip over. In other words, if the whole bread now is resting on the tapered edge on the bottom, so they're just going to fall to the side. The side supports now are essential in holding the bread up. So But if the bread is rectangular in shape, so you just simply stack one on top of the other. They're boxes, and you stack one on top of the other. Why do I need the side support for? So the Gemara says, Agav yukur delechem talach. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why. So over here, a little bit of physics. Because what's going to happen is that if we don't have the side supports, so we're basically now having six breads, one on top of the other, and by the time now we're on the top, so we have now a tremendous amount of pressure being thrust down, and what's going to happen is that the bottom bread is going to get crushed. With the side supports now, we're alleviating some of the stress that the bread is placing one on top of the other, because now some of the weight is going to be cushioned by the side supports. Now the Gemara says, now these side supports, so where are they anchored? Are they anchored onto the table? So the Gemara says, well, if the shape of the lechem apanim is the tapered boat shape, so then the answer is yes, they're going to be anchored onto the table. Because just imagine, and you don't even have to imagine, the pictures over here are wonderful. So just, in other words, just imagine that what we're going to have is that we're going to have these side walls with a protrusion coming out in the bottom. So what we're going to do is we're going to hook it in to the very bottom of the table, so that's resting all the way to the edge, the tapered edge of the lechem upon him. Alamanda, markimin teva prutza, snipeimeichem anachluhu. A'ara, so the Gemara, a'ara manachluhu. So, and if we imagine now that the bread was shaped in rectangular shapes, so now the bread is taking up the totality of the table. And we're going to talk later in this perek about the dimensions of the table and the dimensions of the bread. For our purposes right now, suffice to say that it's going to be covering the entirety of the table. So where are these side supports going to be anchored? Answer the Gemara. And now the Gemara asks incredulously, what are you going to suggest? It's actually based on the ground? And the Gemara says, that's right. It's not. Don't be so incredulous. In the Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mama, the Divrei Omer Kemin Sfina Roketa Sfina Snipa Magabi Shulchan Munachem. The Divrei Omer Kemin Teva Prutza Snipa Magabi Karka Munachem. And the Gemara says that's exactly correct. If the shape of the bread is a boat, so that means to say that the side walls are going to be anchored on the table itself, cushioned directly underneath the bread. If, however, the shape of the bread is rectangular, covering the entire table, so then the base of the walls are going to be on the floor, and they're just going to simply go up, flanking the sides of the table. Now there was a statement by Rav Yehuda. The side supports support the bread support the side supports. And the Gemara says, Kaman damar kimin sfina roketas. And the Gemara says, good. And in other words, and that statement of Rav Yehuda presupposes that the shape of the bread was the boat. And now everything locks into place. So in other words, so the side supports are going to be placed underneath the bread, so that what's happening is that basically it's a lock. And so the bread is supporting the side supports, and the side support is supporting the bread. So this statement of Rav Yehuda works wonderfully if you assume that the shape of the bread was that of a boat.